We're back for this edition of the KGOU Readers Club, where each month we highlight a book about the history and people of Oklahoma. This week is no exception and concerns one of the more interesting characters from the state's past. That's John William Hall. It's a farm boy from southeast Oklahoma who grew up as the Great Depression and Dust Bowl battered the state at the same time and would eventually find himself leading men in one of the most consequential battles of World War II. It's also the story of an unlikely friendship born out of the war that brought Hall together with Roger Shin, an academic type from New York via Ohio. I'm so pleased to have with me on the phone today John William Hall's son, J.K. Hall, the author of the war novel Rare Encounter. John, thanks so much for being with me today.
Well, hello, Logan. I'm glad to be on here and talk to the people of Oklahoma. I'm so pleased. Thanks so much.
Of course. No, I'd say it's a fascinating book about a character that I was not aware of. And so that's always fun to learn a little bit more about the state's history than I knew before. And John William Hall, your dad, being from Oklahoma, have you yourself had much experience here in our state?
I visited my grandfather there when I was very young, before I died, and my father and mother, we took trips into Oklahoma. I visited McAllister and Durant, of course, and some others. And I lived in Oklahoma for a very brief time when I was young, over on the Oklahoma-Arkansas border. Yes, I've had some time there. And then, of course, researching this book, I came back to Oklahoma. I went to Durant, looked in the courthouse there, and we went to the historical library in Oklahoma City. So I've been there, and I think I have a pretty good sense of it, not only from my visitations there, but also from what my father told me about it.
Well, sure. And from reading the book, I can say that you certainly do. Tell us a little bit about yourself first before we get started, and what compelled you to write this book now.
Well, after I got out of the Army, I went to work for my father's business, which was a newspaper and advertising. And then after that, I kind of took off a little bit like he did. I left the family fold and I went to work in communications and marketing at the University of Iowa, and then have been in communications and newspaper work ever since. What compelled me to write the book was the fact that you'd mentioned that you didn't know much about John William Hall. Well, I guess I was in the same state. I thought I knew him pretty well, and I knew a little bit about his war experiences, but it was very little. And so about 25, 28 years after his death, I discovered an account that he had written about his time in the Battle of the Bulge on through the end of the World War II. And I read this, and I found out that, you know, I didn't know this stuff. This is almost unbelievable for me. And so I started looking into it, and I'd remembered some things, and of course, in 1982, I had gone to a reunion of the 60th Armored Infantry Battalion in Fort Riley, Kansas. And that was just before my dad's death. I took him down there, myself and my two brothers, Gene and Rick. And at that time, I got to meet Roger Lincoln Shin, who was the other protagonist in the book. And I read Shin's book after that. He wrote something on his account that included my father in it in a book called Wars and Rumors of Wars. And so all this started coming together about, you know, this is really an incredible story. Nobody knows about it.
Well, it certainly is.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. And Roger Shin, and that's kind of, as we get later into the book, we sort of shift over to him and the class he's teaching. And is that where the title comes from, Rare Encounter? Was it about that sort of rare friendship between the two of them?
Well, there's a number of rare encounters in the book.
There are.
I would say that was the key one. It's this encounter of two very dissimilar people who not only are in the same unit in the war, and they come together, but they also form this bond. And it's an important bond because it affects the way that they conduct themselves in the war, and certainly is something that I think in contemporary times is something we need to remember, that you don't have to be like someone to get to know them and to form a bond that could lead to a lifelong friendship.
And yeah, what a bond they had. We will be talking about that over the course of the hour for sure. Now, this is, we were talking the other day, this is a work of historical fiction, but based on true events. So I kind of find myself wondering several times over the course of the read, well, did this really happen? Or how much liberty did you take with the entire story?
Just about all of the story is based on actuality. The events in the war that I mentioned are all true except for a little bit at the end, which I embellish somewhat. But the accounts that are listed in the war, they're really some skirmishes there. There are some encounters with the German army, which I described in some detail. All those happened. And I drew those from my father's writings that I discovered and from Shin's book. And then I also researched that in the U.S. Army's official guide to the war, the official history of the war. So those are just about all true. What I've done is added dialogue. I wanted to try to get inside the character's head a little bit and try to express that to the reader. Of course, that's fiction. I don't know what the exact words were that they said when they were together, unless it was written down in one of those two accounts. So I've done that. I've escaped reality for a time and went into their dreams to help explain or to try to envision what they were going through or about to go through before battles.
Yeah, which difficult to imagine with the situation that they were facing. You certainly do paint a vivid picture, I would say, of the war, which we do want to talk about. But also, part of the reasons I was particularly fascinated with this was the Oklahoma connection. And the first part of Rare Encounter, we talk about the early life of John William Hall, his upbringing in Oklahoma. Why don't you tell me a little bit about that, about his upbringing, about the family history? I feel like I've gotten to know your family from reading this book. How did he grow up in Oklahoma?
Well, he grew up pretty much as is described in the book. My father was not he didn't talk a lot about his time growing up, but he did some. And he told my mother quite a bit. And so from dialogue or conversations I've had with them, I learned quite a bit about his family growing up in Oklahoma and what he went through and how he became the Oklahoma rifle champion, the National Guard rifle champion, which he was very, very proud of. So the things that I go through at the beginning of the book are just about all true. His father, he was born in Durant. His father came over with his brother, his father's brother, from Mississippi, his brother had shot a law officer over in Mississippi, and they fled Mississippi, came through Arkansas over into the Indian Nation to escape the law. That's the true story that's in the book. And they grew up there, settled, raised a family. They were fairly well off for a while. They even bought a Model A automobile, and then the crash hit. The crash of 1929 and of course the Dust Bowl and the Depression and all that, which split the family apart, which I do talk about in the book. But John William, my father, after his mother died, his father, Arnold, and some of his brothers went to Texas to start anew and earn a living. They left my father at the homestead there in Durant, Oklahoma, to raise his young sister, Lucille, which he did.
Right. And
so he was abandoned there and led a very difficult life for a while.
Yes. And so is your grandfather, Arnold, right?
Yes.
Not certainly the most sympathetic character, I would say, in the book. Disciplinarian, harsh disciplinarian. There's one scene where John William gets kind of beaten to within an inch of his life for speaking at the dinner table, despite the fact that Arnold, like you mentioned, the Model A. Some of the stuff was to the detriment of the rest of the family, right? He was always kind of he was always scheming, trying to make a buck. But the family didn't always get the benefit of that, right?
That's right, yes.
And now...
Yeah, he was a broker. He was a very strong entrepreneurial spirit.
Right, and kind of juxtaposed to him, it was Lucy Lee, right? Was John Williams' mom, and that would have been your grandmother... who saw something in John William beyond the confines of the Durant area and sort of encouraged him. It seemed like she had more of a, helped shape him more than maybe his father did.
Yes, I think that's very true. She was a very strong influence on him. Now, some of this is fictionalized, but the basic idea is that she is true, that she wielded some influence on him, and I think was a counterbalance to Arnold's effect on him. She's a strong character in the book, and was a strong character in real life. She had a lot to go through. They had 8 children. There seemed like a constant battle. And of course, John William was caught in that. And he was drawn from one side to the other. And that caused a great deal of stress on him. He was a person who wanted to set his own agenda. He was a very independent sort of fellow. And he didn't want to necessarily fall into the future that his father had already carved out for him in his mind. And so that takes a, has a grip in the book, person who tries to express himself and wants to express himself and wants to lead his own life based on his own internal compass and not that of someone else. And of course that shows up in the war as well, because he doesn't always follow the military manual.
No, he does not. And one of the reasons it seems that he was so interested in, or maybe that led him toward military service, was one of his older brothers who was in the National Guard taught him to shoot, and he became, like you said, just one of the best marksmen in the state, right?
Yes. And at a very young age, and he started at, he joined the National Guard at, I put 16 in the book. He had to, it may have been 17. We weren't quite sure, but he got into the National Guard before he was really eligible to be. And what he wanted to do is he wanted to be able to get the carbine and the shells, because of course they couldn't afford ammunition as the family. And he wanted to learn to shoot. Roy Hall, his older brother, was already in the National Guard and taught him the essence of marksmanship, and was a very, very strong influence on his love of weaponry and the discipline it takes to become a champion. And I don't know whether this will be seen on your website, but I sent a photograph of John William when he was about in his early 20s, and is told and he's wearing the National Guard uniform and hat, and his chest is plastered with all of these medals that he won in three consecutive National Guard championship meets. So he loved it.
Well, we will definitely get that up online here very, very soon. And we do want to take a quick break, though, because I want to get into the war. So I want to go over a little bit about his early life and sort of what led him to where he was at before World War II. But let's do take a quick break here, and we'll be back in just a few moments with more from J.K. Hall, author of Rare Encounter, on the KGOU Readers Club. We're back with the KGOU Readers Club, Rare Encounter, and its author, J.K. Hall. As we mentioned before the break, the first part of the book sort of establishes the early life of John William Hall, and then we transition to the other protagonist in the book, Roger Shin, in a lecture hall in New York. Tell me a little bit about what's happening in the book at that time. This all takes place within the context of one of his classes 20 years after World War II and during the Vietnam era.
Yes. Well, Shin was my father's colleague in the war, as we mentioned earlier, and he went through some hellish situations in the war. He was with my father for the opening salvo of the first three or four days of the Battle of the Bulge, and then after that, he was captured and was a prisoner of war in Poland and Germany. But he survived the war and was with my father. And as I mentioned, he was with my father during some of the experiences my father had in combat. And he had never told anyone about his experience in World War II except his wife, Catherine. He didn't write his book until years and years after. But Shin is now a professor of theology, of social ethics, at Columbia University and Union Theological Seminary in New York. And the Vietnam War has just begun. It's 1965. I mean, it's just begun to get noticed. The American Army has been going into Vietnam, doing skirmishes and that kind of thing, and so it's really starting to build, and Shin believes that this is the time for him to tell his students, who are now embroiled in thinking about the Vietnam War, about ethics in war, and uses my father's experiences and his experiences in war to try to give them a fuller picture of what war is all about.
And they push back on
it. I should mention.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, they push back on him pretty hard throughout most of the book on the points that he's trying to make and why his experiences were relevant to that current time.
That's right. And it was quite a surprise to the students, I'm sure, when they found out that Roger Lincoln Shin was a combat infantryman in World War II and at the greatest battle of the war. Because he's not—he's not a big man. He was thin, stayed thin all his life. He just was not the combat infantry type that you would normally expect. So jaws dropped when he told his students that what he had went through and that he was actually in the Army. So there's this dialogue that comes about, this give and take, as you say, in the classroom when Shin is basically challenged by young students who are very virulently anti-war. And the book never really takes one side or the other, but it explains or it examines what the reality is, I think, in some true regard. And so Shin is up there, and Shin is actually a counselor of conscientious objectors during the Vietnam War, but he's defending in his classroom actions that took place in World War II. And as you say, he gets a lot of pushback from that from some of the students.
I'm sure they do. Eventually, at least most of them do seem to get the point by the end of the semester there. And that is true. There was this class that he taught during that time where he basically wrapped it entirely around the lessons learned in war and his own experience.
Yes. And I should mention this, that though the dialogue, as I've mentioned, is and these settings are fictitious, I did learn very late on, even after I started writing this book, or thinking about this book, not writing it, but as I was thinking about writing this book, that my brother Rick, who was in college at the University of North Carolina, when Roger Shin went down there from Columbia to give a lecture, and my brother Rick went to that lecture and talked to him afterwards, and we both learned something we didn't know before, and that was that Professor Shin used our father's experiences and his decisions in war in his own classroom. And so that's why I built this section of the book around that reality. And the other thing was that Captain Shin was with Captain Hall at some of the skirmishes that they were in. And I expound on one of those where Captain Hall has been wounded and burned, and he's decided to move his task force to take on an attacking German infantry group, and decides that he is going to have the his gunner load a machine gun with white phosphorus bullets. And we learned, and Rick learned at his meeting with Shin, that Shin was right there with Paul at that moment.
Wow, and of course, yeah, and that would obviously a terrible way to die, burning white phosphorus. But it and then it speaks to your dad's character, Captain Hall's character. He doesn't kill anybody. He uses that as a scare tactic, right?
That's correct. He had decided early on that he was going to be able to, or at least to the best of his ability, get these Volksgrenadiers to surrender, rather than having to have a very costly battle with them. So he loads white phosphorus shells into the machine gun and tells the sergeant, the gunner, to fire over the heads of the Germans, which he does. And eventually, after three of these sessions, the German soldiers, to a man, fall down onto the ground and surrender. And that's detailed in something I discovered in that account that my father wrote, and then was verified by Shin at that meeting with my brother. So it's a very dramatic time, and this event and happens within the first I think 60 hours of the Battle of the Bulge, and one cannot hardly believe what that battle was like until you study it and you read what the men went through.
Well, tell us a little bit about that, and specifically relating to Captain Hall. He was decorated for his service during the battle. Tell me a little bit more about that. His marksmanship came in pretty handy.
Yes, he ran into a German contingent of Volksgrenadiers with a task force that was to rescue Roger Shin's company, which was surrounded by Germans. Now, I think most people who follow World War II know that the Battle of the Bulge was a big surprise to the Americans. They weren't expecting it, most of them, and it caught them with their pants down, so to speak, and it was a horrendous first 3 or 4 days because the Germans had collected so many men, so many armies, so much artillery to try to break through and drive to the sea. So here's Shin and Hall. My father was he was experienced in the military, but he'd never been in combat. Neither had Shin. Dad was had hoped to escape the vortex of the Dust Bowl and the Depression and move on to something that would spell a better future for him. And he finds out that his first day in battle is at the Battle of the Bulge. And here he is, mid-20s and facing this. Shin is the same way. Neither one had been in battle before and are absolutely awestruck by the German strength.
After being bored for quite some time, right? I think I remember one part, Captain Hall is always getting pretty anxious. It's just a bunch of sitting around and waiting.
That's right. they landed right after D-Day in France, and then moved up into Belgium and Luxembourg. And this was in August. And they sat there through August and September, October, November, right on the line of Germany. Luxembourg butts up against Germany. There they are. They can see some of the Germans on the other side of the river. They don't know what's going on, but they're sitting there and not doing anything. And my father is saying, that I'm a good marksman, ready to take on the Germans, and I'm just sitting here. The war's going to be over before I even get in it. And so his men also were bored, and it was one of those things that the Allies wanted them to hold that position, even though it was a very thin group of soldiers on that line. They wanted them to hold that position, and they wanted Hitler to make his moves wherever they were going to be. They didn't expect this.
No, and he kind of seems to blame himself, some Captain Hall, for not being, I guess, more prepared when the attack finally comes, or being taken off guard. But I don't know how you wouldn't be if you'd been sitting out there for months and months. That seemed to bother him somewhat throughout his time over there, that he wasn't more prepared, I guess, for that attack.
Yeah, he was. His writing was very specific on that. That he was terribly disappointed in himself. His post was in a castle, overlooking the Luxembourg German river valley, and it was. Here he was sitting and not doing anything, and they were nice accommodations, he thought, and then the battle strikes, and he looks out and he sees the German strategy before his eyes, and they're moving up the ravines and being cloaked by the ravines, and then of course there's the Blitzkrieg, which the artillery performs to try to loosen them up, and he just thinks that, well, these Germans are brilliant. Why didn't I expect this? Why didn't I figure it out and go and tell my superiors about it? And so, until he is able to get into combat himself and prove himself, he's in a very, very bad mental state because of that.
And then he does get into battle, and he certainly proves himself, right? I mean, the descriptions in the book we know he was a really good shot, but he was hitting the Nazis in the head pretty much just every time, it seems.
Yes, he did. That's a true story, a true account. And it said, he said in his account that he went into a kind of a white zone, that after he had, his tank was hit, he was an armored infantryman. After his tank was hit and caught on fire, and he left the tank and then was almost killed by a bazooka shot, he goes into this kind of dreamlike state, and he attacks the Germans on his own. Now, he had asked for his men to come forward to help him, but they didn't come. The thing about that was that they really weren't infantrymen at all. They were engineers who had been pulled from an engineering company, and they had very little combat experience and very little rifle experience. The regular officers, or the regular infantrymen, were all surrounded by Germans. So they had to piece together this task force to go in and try to fight them. So he didn't blame the men for not coming out and joining the battle, but he decided he was going to take it on himself, and that's what he did. And he was pretty devastating to the German forces.
Yeah, of course, his commanding officer didn't exactly love him taking things upon himself. Wanted him to be, you know, more of a leader, have his men fight. But I guess he was just in that sort of trance-like state. So.
Correct. Yeah. He did get some. I may have played that up a little bit. I don't exactly know what went on with the company commander, who was Hall, and the battalion commander. But there was some friction, and of course, officers, my father was a captain, officers are supposed to lead, they're supposed to delegate, they're supposed to assign strategy and make sure that it gets done. Well, here he was caught with no help but himself, and the Nazis were dug into the trenches, and they were trying to kill him. And they were trying to break through and kill the rest of his men. So he took matters in his own hand. He threw out the manual and decided that he was going to be the sharpshooter.
And now, it is despite his actions, they weren't able to actually go and rescue Shin's company at that time, right? Was that when Roger Shin was taken captive by the Germans?
Shin was watching all of this because his company was surrounded, but you're correct. They were not able to break through. Hall's task force was pretty well devastated, and they retreated back into the woods. And this is when this sharpshooting experience took place. Shin was captured a few days later when he tried to go out and make contact with his men. After this, Hall was burned and shot. He had caught a grenade or some kind of metal in his leg, and he went into the hospital and stayed there a few days before he came back.
And Shin is captured by the Nazis and just tortured. No other way to put it, and it's vividly detailed in the book. And then Captain Hall off to the hospital, where we see another one of the rare encounters that we talk about through the book with Sam Waterford, right? One of the army nurses who he had met before back in the United States, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, I have a couple of questions about that and a few more for you, but we're going to take one more break here, a short one. Before we get in, a few questions for J.K. Hall. He is the author of Rare Encounter, including what happened to Major John William Hall after the war. We'll be back on the KGOU Readers Club. We're back with the KGOU Readers Club, Rare Encounter, and its author, J.K. Hall. Well, as we get toward the end of the book here, we see another one of these sort of morality lessons or ethics lessons that probably Dr. Shin may have used in did use in his classroom discussion over the course of that semester. You talked earlier about the aiming the white phosphorus over the heads of the enemy soldiers, trying to get them to surrender. We come to another situation like that where, well, first of all, and I think I have the sequence correct, Hall and his men liberate a Nazi concentration camp. They come across a Nazi concentration camp and all the horrors that involves. And then they march on and seem to find perhaps the soldiers who are responsible for that in a village, and kind of the general, or several of the men in the group, want to just wipe them out. And so does Captain Hall at first, right?
Yes. Yes, he's been wounded twice, been sent to a London hospital. He's been in the war since for many months, and I think he's very tired. And when he saw the tired and depleted, and when he saw the concentration camp, it was more than he could bear. And so they pursued the prisoners were left, but the Nazis who held the camp had departed. And so they decided to pursue those people. This was right near the end of the war. And when they come across them, Hall wants to wipe them out. And he's being urged by his by some of his soldiers to do that. And it certainly seems to run counter to what Captain Hall had done earlier and what his thinking was. But at the last moment, I don't think I'll say what happens at the last moment, but there was certainly a defining point in the book on what decisions were made in regard to those prisoners and how he handled that.
And was so
that was yes, another rare encounter.
Yes, and was that different from the I think, was it a different instance where he had sent one of his men in to get the Nazis to surrender?
Yeah.
And kind of was that the same situation?
No, that was a little earlier.
That's right.
But you're correct that was a key situation where they were chasing, this was in Germany, they were chasing the Germans toward Berlin and Leipzig. And they came across this village, and there were going to be bombers sent from London to destroy that village and many others along a certain line, a certain perimeter. And so Hall, Captain Hall, decides he's going to take an unorthodox approach to this village. And he has all the war plans in his hand, the bombing raid specifications, where the American troops are going to be positioned and where they're going to attack. And he sends a sergeant that he trusts, who is bilingual and speaks German and English, and some other languages. So I guess he's multilingual. He sends him to the German. To visit the German camp and tell them he wants them to surrender. He's doing this on behalf of Captain Hall. And he sends with that sergeant all the war plans so that he can show the Germans the American war plans and how they're going to destroy and when they're going to destroy that village and which is a collection of not only a lot of civilians, but a lot of German, or a lot of German soldiers. So you can imagine that's not out of the Army playbook.
No, and again, his superior in the book, not too pleased about it, despite the fact that it works, his ploy works, but, you know, it could have gone a different way. He didn't know what these particular Nazis were going to be like, how they were going to react, whether there was some, you know, desire to stay alive, or whether they were just ruthless, bloodthirsty killers, as even some in his own company were.
Yes, exactly. It was a gamble. But I think it was a calculated risk that he took, not just a risk. He had a certain sense of territory and position and place and people. And he seemed to be good at understanding what was going on in the German mind. And he took a gamble, and it worked. And it did in two other places as well in the book.
Well, he's just an amazing character and an amazing story. I have a few questions just outside of the actual context of the book itself about your dad, John William Hall, because we don't hear anything much from after the war. And I was waiting throughout the entire book because this woman keeps coming up in his life, Sam Waterford, right? Now, was she,
yes,
she a real person in real life? Or?
She was not.
Okay.
She's a fictitious character. But I saw photographs of my father with some nurses that he took quite a few photographs when he was in the war, by the way. And so a lot of this is had helped this. But no, she was built out of a number of different people.
I said, yeah, I was kind of waiting for it to be revealed that this was going to be your mother, but that is not the case.
Not the case, no.
What about Leo Graham, his friend from Oklahoma, who another rare encounter in the book, who he comes across again in the war? Was that a real character?
Leo Graham is a real character. I changed some of his attributes slightly, but Leo Graham was definitely a real character. He became, he was my father's friend in the war, and they kept in touch long after the war was over. Leo Graham's an important character in this book because he's kind of a gadfly. He's always whispering in Hall's ear and trying to keep him nailed to what he should be doing, the right thing to be doing. Leo Graham is kind of a wizard, a boy wizard, growing up in Durant, Oklahoma, and then joined Hall's company in the war as his executive officer, which was also true. And so they have a very important relationship, and both very important characters in the book.
I'm just so curious about what happened to some of these people later in life. We see we see Dr. Shin, obviously 20 years later in his classroom in the 60s. What became of Shin after that? What did he do with the rest of his life, and how long did he live?
He lived a long time. He lived into his 90s. And I read, there was an obituary in the New York Times about him, and he stayed engaged in theological affairs all his life. He was an envoy to the UN. He wrote a number of books. And was really instrumental in the Protestant movements of the 60s and 70s. So he was an important figure, but an academic, albeit a little bit of a maverick himself.
And what about Leo Graham? Did you ever hear from him again outside of stories from your dad? Know what became of him?
Well, Leo went into business for himself. I did meet him once when I was probably about 13 or 14 in Kansas City, Missouri. And I think they just joined up to get together. But he had his own business. He's a salesman and ran his own firm. And that's really about all I know about him, other than the fact that he and my father talked quite a bit. And my father loved him.
Sure. And now your father, right at the end of the war, he gets promoted to major. Major Hall, but he doesn't stay in the military following the war, right?
That's correct. They'd promote him to major, and they actually told him that he would get another promotion fairly soon if he stayed in the regular army for a career. And he decided that he wasn't going to do that. I think knowing my father that he was very proud of his service. He was proud of his men. He believed very deeply that fascism had to be defeated because it was going to spread to the rest of the world. But I think his experience in war, what he saw, was more than that he didn't want to spend his life in that kind of situation, and he wanted to raise a family, and that was important to him, and he wanted to get back home and try to get some kind of normality back to his life. So he turned him down. I think he was also a little bit skeptical about the promises at that time. And there's a scene in there when Captain Hall is talking to Shin about when the American government fired on the veterans in Washington, D.C. And that stuck in his mind, and I remember him telling me about that. So he was always a little bit skeptical about promises and whether they're going to be kept or not.
Sure.
But I think the real reason was that he'd had enough of war. He thought he'd done his duty, and he wanted to get back to raising a family.
Well, he had certainly seen plenty of it, and he did just that. What a fascinating character your dad was, Dr. Shin was, and what an excellent book. It was just a pleasure. J.K. Hall, author of Rare Encounter, thanks so much for our conversation today.
Thanks so much, Logan. I enjoyed it very much.
Me as well. Well, that's it for the KGOU Readers Club for this month. Thanks for listening to KGOU and being part of the KGOU Readers Club.